Hello, everyone. I'm Trent Lewis. Welcome to another edition of Roll Out, to the program where we gather every day at this time. Well, we do it Monday through Friday anyway. And what we do when we gather is continue to address the issues between food production and food consumption. Checking in from north of Spring Valley, Nevada, where we see that a solar flare did not get Hank Vogler yet. What's going on, White Pine County, Nevada?
Well, it's just another beautiful day in the neighborhood. It's starting to get daylight at this time of the day. That's nice.
I shouldn't have said anything about a solar flare taking you out. You had a little cut out there after I mentioned that. Anyway. Yeah, exactly like that. Hank,
well, speech impediment.
I don't want to tell you this, but in the last 2 weeks, we're now over 9 inches of rain.
Wow. Well, good for somebody. I mean, when this thing shut off out here, it shut off. I got springs that are drying up or running a third of what they usually run in a normal year. Yeah. And it's been last night was the first night I can think of that it didn't freeze. It has froze every night. And so what grass has come out of the ground is getting pinched. It's not enough to kill it, but it's pinching it. But that's the way it is. Everybody gets his turn. That's all. And I'm grateful that you guys got it because, $4 corn, we'll make cheap cattle down the road, but right now it's kind of got the cow deal working and the sheep deal's working. They've got lambs up almost to $3.
Really?
So, yeah.
Yeah. I want to say one other thing about the rain. I mean, 9 inches, and normally when we get 9 inches this time of year, and let me back up. We knew we had moisture coming because the fog days 90 days ago told us that we're going to have some big moisture days coming. So I still think we got a snow coming, even though we've been 70 degrees, 80 degrees in the day, 50 at night. I think we're going to get one last blast of winter. But I have never in my life, Hank Vogler, saw 9 inches of rain come in the manner that it has come. I mean, it just drizzles all day. Yesterday, it just rained all day. By the way, Grandpa said when it rains on church people, it's going to rain every day of the week. And it just comes so gentle and so nice. There's been like no washing whatsoever.
Well, now, are the crops in or is this going to make it too wet to put the crops in and those kind of things? I mean, farmers can always kind of find a little downside in there,
Oh, yeah. There's plenty of downside. We had Friday and Saturday perfect weather days. I mean, the weather was the best you could ever ask for a May. Just beautiful. And the solar flares caused the farmers' GPS auto steers to go haywire. And so they were having trouble planting because they couldn't stay. I had one friend of mine. He said, yeah, I got in a tractor. I turned it on and we went left and we weren't supposed to go to left. I don't know if you heard about that, but the solar flares have really messed with the GPS auto steers.
Well, did they have those on those old John Deere G's that I grew up with?
Yes, they did.
I don't remember.
It was called a 12-year-old kid looking over the steering wheel.
Yeah, and picking out a spot on the Steens Mountains and heading right for it, and that'd usually keep you in line. Yes, sir, Bob.
That
A's, B's.
I'm not H's, a tractor. I'm M's. Not a tractor guy, Hank. But that 1755 that I'm looking at right there, 1972, 1755 is the first tractor I ever drove, and I spent far too many hours sitting in that thing, field cultivating or doing whatever. And mine was the muffler. My auto steer was the muffler. I had to keep the muffler exactly where I needed it over some target, and that's how I kept a straight row.
I'll tell you, when you moved up town on the island ranch, one of the G's had a cushioned seat. The rest of them just had an old iron box set on. And that was the tractor that they had the post hole digger on. And, of course, Bob Carlson always drove it. So But yes, sir, that was uptown. That had a cushion seat.
So my father-in-law has it's like a late 40s something farm hall, and it's got that seat. Only thing is now the seat, and people pay big money to go to the ocean to go surfing. You could just go rake hay with this old farm hall, and you're sitting in this seat like this all day. I mean, it's like you're riding a wave.
And the best part was when the first part of the summer, the horse flies had come out. And of course, they were big as a hummingbird. And the mosquitoes early in the morning. I mean, it was quite a challenge to not want to move to someplace like a city. A lot of people couldn't take it because there was some misery drawbacks to it, too. So, but them old tractors, Poppin' Johnny's.
So I don't remember. There's no place at your ranch where you have a whole wealth of your grandpa's old draft and harness equipment. Why don't you have that saved? That would be pretty valuable today.
Well, in the barn at the island, there was probably enough harness in there to harness 25 or 30 head of horses, but that phase was going out. There was hardly any market for it, and people would come over and borrow it. He'd give that stuff away. It just was considered old and useless. The horses, the teams were fewer and fewer all the time. Pat Cope always fed with teams, but they just were going away. And of course, the modern stuff was the A's, the B's, the H's, the M's, the G's. That was big time, Pop, and those old tractors, they didn't have pistons that went sideways. They went frontwards and backwards. They were parallel. And all those old equipment, when he sold the ranch out in 65 and parked all that equipment on this 80-acre parcel that he bought, and people came by and bought it from him, sold it. It just wasn't there. And then when he got the ranch back in 70, new John Deere tractors and everything to hay. And then the hay crew went from 36 people to hay down to about 12 with the swathers and the big rakes and everything like that, bread loaf stackers. So, yeah.
So I'm implying you were part of this, but I did do the history. In 1935, when we did not have thrashing machines even. We just had thrashing machines, but we had no mechanical equipment like a combine. We made shocks and then would thrash the wheat. 1 acre of wheat that had a yield of 15 bushel. Do you know how many hours it took for the community? Because it wasn't just one guy, it was a community to get that wheat harvested.
Oh, goodness sakes, it had to have been a slug. 15 hours?
4.5 hours to get 35.
And in 1.5 hours per bushel.
Yeah. And in today's world, the slowest combine harvests 30 acres of wheat in an hour.
Wow. Well, granddad was a pusher. Now he had John Deere 55 combines and you'd be sitting there trying to eat your lunch and blow the chaff off of your face before it all fell on your sandwich. And he'd be talking about one of these days, we're going to get a combine with air conditioning. And I mean, it would just stop everybody's heart. Oh my God, we had some of them towards the end of his career, they had umbrellas, and the flying ants that hit the umbrella, it just sounded like it was raining all the time.
Yeah.
But he had 9 of them. And so, I mean, it was pretty big harvest time. And then when he'd sell that brew barley to Blitz Brewing Company or Olympia, they'd send a guy out. And when you'd get a bin full, the combine bin, he'd had a kind of a deal that he'd weigh it and shake it and level it out. And he'd say brew barley or feed barley.
Feed barley.
And then you went over and put it in the truck. Yeah. So I, yeah, that was, but I mean, it's pretty high, you know, high tone.
It's Roll Route.
And Hank Bogart, he had farming equipment.
Trent Luce will be back with more Historical Perspective of Wheat Harvest 101 after this. Speaking of a historical perspective, what's going on with the National Western Stock Show and Rodeo continues to be on the forefront of culture celebrations. That's really what it is. A celebration of the culture yesteryear, which built great agricultural states like Colorado. And then today you come to the challenges that we have to continue to get what people need, food, fiber, pharmaceuticals, and fuel. It's all on display in a competitive sort of nature at the National Western Denver, Colorado. I would suggest that you right now start making plans to migrate to Denver January 2025. I plan to be there for most of the event, if not all, maybe every single day. I missed too much last year. Don't miss a day. NationalWestern.com. Welcome back. Roll Route, Trent Luce, alongside Hank Vogler. So I'm going to repeat, I've never been a farm guy. I'm more into, you know, saddling or draft or chasing cows. But I did experience in my lifetime in an Oliver, Dad's combine. The first combine I remember was an Oliver, because when I was a kid, I was an Oliver. Everything was Oliver. And then we moved to White. But the worst thing you could do was run that combine with no air conditioning, barely a cab, and that wheat harvest and that wheat dust was just, I mean, it just never set well with me. But that was a miserable job. You're better off sitting out open air than in that cab, that first cab they made on those combines in wheat harvest. Harvest was different than corn.
I'll bet. And at night, you'd take a bath with soda water, put baking soda in the water.
Oh, really?
I mean, that chaff running down your neck and everything would just absolutely you on fire. If you scratched once, you were done. You scratched all night long.
You know what? I actually think there's a slogan in that. If you scratched once, you were done. I'm not sure that's ever gone away, whether it has to do with wheat chaff or not.
But he had Van Brunt drills, John Deere Van Brunt drills, and he jerry-rigged them up to where he could pull four of them with a cap. So his four 12-footers, it was 48-foot wide. Then he had three of them, so they could flat put the grain in the ground. What he did is he flooded this field in the wintertime when nobody wanted the water, and Fairbanks Morris had built him two pumps, and he put them in each end, the lower end of the field. He'd flood that in the wintertime rather than let the water go to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And then he'd kick those pumps on in March, and those pumps would pump 13,500 gallons a minute. They just lifted it up over a dike, and it would flood out into the sagebrush. There was a 48-inch pipe and a 36-inch pipe. Wouldn't pack the water. It just flooded everywhere. And it was so powerful that the carp would hit the screen on the bottom of those pumps. And then we'd back flush them, shut them off for a minute to clean them off. And there'd just be bones, no meat, nothing. It sucked the bones right off those carp.
Wow.
But, and then it would dry up. And then he'd go out there and he had Graham Holm plows and rod weeders, 48-foot wide rod weeders, and then he'd drill it in that kind of almost mud. And then that was his barley field. Then he had rye fields. And I tended to kind of run as fast as I could to the barn and get a horseback and go with the cowboys.
Yeah.
I had to ride. Somebody was always on a drunk or something, you know, and so you always wound up out there helping. And I was riding the drills one day, which if you have never ridden the drills to check to see if everything's working, you have not lived. And of course, Grandpa chewed Peerless tobacco and he'd get to thinking about something and heading off into the brush, and you'd look down and it was your job that a tube had come out or something wasn't working. And do you think you could get him to stop? You had to run up alongside the cat and hit him with a rocker. Well, there were no rocks in that country, but a clod. Oh, I said, well, you got some plug. This thing's plugged up. Well, why didn't you tell me? I said, I've been running beside you for a half hour.
You know, you think about all the things as kids we did on and with a tractor. We sit on the fender. You do all these things that in today's world, parents would be arrested. I'd be arrested if I did that with a daughter.
Absolutely. Absolutely. On the pickup or the truck, the 1952 Ford flatbed, when we were coming back, they had the blinker lights were on the wheel wells and they stuck up. So there'd be a kid straddling that on the front. There'd be kids dangling their legs over all the way around the outside because there was 13 mowing machines. And we'd be headed back to the house, dust a boiling, I mean, everything in the world. Yes, sir, OSHA would come by and we'd all still be in jail.
My friend, Don McLean, Quincy, Illinois, has a agricultural museum. He's got a farm museum. He's even got a dibble stick in there. And a lot of people don't even know what a dibble stick is. But dibble stick was the original corn planter. A stick, you push in the ground, a little kernel of corn will go out and it deposit a fish right on top of it. A little minnow for fertilizing. But there are several machines that were started, like you just described, but this is back to draft, where there's a seat for the person, the farmer, who's driving the team. But then there's another seat that a kid is sitting on and would be monitoring what you just described, would be either making sure the corn was being planted right or something else. Right in front of where if that kid fell off, they're going to get run over with that gizmo. I mean, it's just unbelievable what we were willing to put kids in the place of back in the day.
Well, and I don't know how many kids from Burns, Oregon and Hines that bought their first car or saved their money to go to college, all with a summer job working on a hay crew.
Yeah.
And that was it. And then when school started in the fall, the transients would be coming out of California as they followed the different harvesting of crops. And they would come there. There's usually three or four of them in an old, you know, 51 Buick. And they'd start rolling in and they would do their job. And then from Burns, they would go on into Washington and other parts to pick fruit. And then when they got to the Canadian border, they'd turn around and go back to California and work in the lettuce fields and stuff like that. There was no, after the Second World War, you know, Eisenhower deported, I think they called it the Operation Wetback, and they sent thousands and thousands, millions, I believe, back to Mexico and South America to make jobs for the people returning from the war. And, this immigration deal didn't start yesterday. So it's just, you know, it's crazy.
You call somebody a wetback today, you get labeled a racist. And in that day, they had Operation Wetback.
I'm sure that's what it was called. I'd bet you money that it had wetback in there or something like that. Dwight Eisenhower sent them home. You better bet you, because they came up here during the Second World War on the Brazero program to take the jobs to produce crops and things because all the men were off fighting the war. Yes, sir.
1953, the largest mass deportation in American history from 1953 to 1954, called Operation Wetback. We need to reinstill Operation Wetback. What does that take?
We need to instill not only wetback, but flying mosquitoes. They bring them in the carloads and the airplanes, too. I mean, everything. It's just... And they're not taking jobs. They're taking welfare. It's costing us billions of dollars. You know,
oh, absolutely.
You wait when them Antarcticans show up, we're in trouble. As soon as they start showing up, you know that we've got real trouble. You know, I have to think about these things and kind of get you up to speed, lad. You know, yeah. I mean, I have moments like if two vegans get in an argument, is it still called a beef? I just wondered about these things all the time. It's what I have to do out here to entertain myself.
Oh, you know what? You just inspired me to come up with a whole list of those vegan arguments. If one vegan, if two vegans get in an argument, one runs scared. Do you call him a chicken?
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be right. You know, and what I want to know is there's two states now that banned, and I don't know to what degree. I don't even know if it would stand a court test, have banned artificial meat. Well, okay. So for tens of thousands of years, the main diet of the Homo sapien was meat. Yep. Of any flavor and any kind. It was a roller coaster of survival. And then we learned how to farm. And when we started farming, that's when we had surplus agricultural production. And when we had surplus agricultural production, we could do other things and invent languages and invent machinery. And all that machinery was either for war, to protect our farming, because other tribes would try and take your food away from you. I mean, everything was based on food. And now we're worried about insulting somebody that's a vegan. Well, why don't they come up with artificial rutabagas or something like that made out of meat? I mean, all these things are out there. They're possible. But what's wrong with just a normal diet that was our sustenance for tens of thousands of years?
Just over the weekend,
makes no sense.
I read a study that prisons actually did some testing on humans, whether that was legal or not, I don't know, nutritionally testing. And they had vegans that they created a vegan diet for inmates to not only to see if it was cheaper, but to see what happened. And guess what? Aggression went up and it was a total wreck because their body was not nutritionally sound. Hank Vogler, Trent Luce. We're back in the second half. We're right just ahead. Greg Hager is tearing it up in the UK. Check it out online, greghager.com. Welcome back, Roll Route, Trent Luce, alongside Hank Vogler, weighing in from White Pine County, Nevada. So Colorado announced on Friday, Hank, that they are going to monitor 70 dairy farm workers because they want to make sure these 70 dairy farm workers do not develop avian influenza, despite the fact that they said none of them show any conditions or symptoms of avian influenza. The avian influenza wave is coming. I hope we're smart enough and we have leaders that say, we bought this bovine fecal matter once, no more.
Yeah, and it's not fatal in the human being, is it?
Well, you get a bad case of pink eye.
I mean, yeah.
Your eyes red for 3 days and then you go back to normal. But, okay, with all that said, I don't want to minimize it because, Hank, I can share with you, in fact, I will when we're done. In 2013, the University of Minnesota sent a letter to the Obama administration that they were aware of gain of function being done on H5N1 viruses to make it more deadly. And I saw another article in 2014, they confirmed that they concluded that. And so what I think is happening is they have all this bird flu talk going on out there, but there's another strain that isn't going to mutate. They've already mutated in a lab. I can give you the biologist talking about we can do in a lab in a couple of weeks what it used to take our years to put together and make it very deadly. So I think it's just a precursor to what they're going to try to bring on us next.
Well, it worked so well the last time to inflate our money and to lock everybody up and control the masses. I mean, yeah. I'm not surprised. You know, I've gotten so cynical about all these crazy things. Now, if you had a bunch of wells in Nebraska that were pumping out 2 or 3 gallons of oil, would you rather sell it on the open market at $25 a barrel? Or would you rather wait till it's $80 a barrel? So they shut down the copper mine in Alaska. They know where the copper mine is at. They know what it would take to go in and get it. But if you had a copper mine, wouldn't you contribute to the environmental movement to not produce any more copper? Because we have copper at record high levels, and they have to have copper for all these different electronic things that they're trying to shove down our throats. You know, you find some really strange bedfellows. we're producing more oil now than we were under the Trump administration. Why? Because everybody had a timer on their oil well before. And now with the price of oil up to where it's reasonable to pump again, they're pumping oil. So who is contributing to the worst president we've had in the history of America, but the people who have a vested interest in keeping that flunky in position? I don't know. You got to be careful about joining anything because there's always somebody with an ulterior motive.
Guess where I'm headed when we get done today. I'm going to spend the next 3 days in Bismarck at the Williston Basin Petroleum Conference and going to answer every question you ever had about petroleum.
Well, that'd be good because I'm telling you, if you're from anywhere in the world that's producing oil, you'd rather sell it at $80 a barrel than you would at $20 a barrel. That's just common sense. Do you want to have corn stay at $4? Or do you want corn to, they say that the combines and the tractors and stuff are starting to show up in these auctions. And life on the farm is not as much fun as it was a couple of years ago.
Yeah, like 20.
Yeah.
But I think that all that farm equipment is still bringing a ton of money. It's just changing hands and consolidating into fewer people farming. That's what's happening. Because government picks the winners and losers.
And the fact that farm land has still maintained a high, lofty position. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the history, if that tips over and you cannot borrow against that land, you know, just ranches for years and years and years, and they probably wouldn't admit it, but most of your ag credit departments, if you were a good enough farmer that you could kind of be between a 3% gain and a 3% loss, they'd pack you forever because your land inflated faster than your losses in the down years.
Sure.
The guys that they took out were the guys that were 5 and 10% down vacillating, and that they took them out. Well, it's the same thing now. If you need the equipment to, instead of planting 400 acres a day, plant 500 acres a day, and you get your cost of doing business down, you step out, buy some more land, you buy, you know, that's who, you know, and if it works, you're a hero. But if you find out that land is a commodity that just has a longer cycle, you can get caught in a trap there too.
Well, we've got a history of doing that, Hank. I mean, doing whatever it takes to keep the land together, and the land is the value.
Yes, yes. The commodity that you raise, whether it's livestock or whatever, it vacillates. There's nothing, you know, and the price goes up, everybody should maintain or actually cull a few more. But instead, they, you know, if I can get 263 bushels per acre, where I'm now producing 210 bushels per acre, they do it and they become their own worst enemy. But if we started limiting production, you watch the government come after you then. You think they're trying to take land away from you and put it in CRP and 30 by 30 and all this other crap. If the farmers, like they have been doing in Europe, rebelling against all the junk that comes out of their governments, I guarantee you the old FSA guy is going to be knocking on their doors. You know, I'm considered a preferred customer at American Ag Credit, so they only want 9.25 for operating money. Well, that's a far cry from 5% that used to be. And
operating money is costing 9.2% right now.
2.5. That's what they say on their deal.
Really?
I kind of smelled a rat. I, you know, that deal that happened to me back in the 80s and what I saw, I got started really. That got me my start because everybody else fell out of line. Nobody wanted, it was ugly. But I kind of always had this premonition. So I've been working very hard not to use my revolving line of credit. And right now I'm operating month to month on my own money. I've only had to borrow money for 1 month in January. So just, I don't care who you are. When you go from 5% borrowed money to 9.25, there's sticker shock there.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Hey, and almost unrelated news. You assume what?
I assume that there are other people that are they're charging more than 9.25.
Yeah.
So,
and almost unrelated news, I discovered over the weekend, even though it's been out for a while, but I just figured out, you know, people often report that Bill Gates is the largest farmland owner in the United States. And I don't know why they do this, but 50 people own more land than Bill Gates. But Bill Gates owns 100% tillable land. So they call him the biggest farmland owner in the United States. If you own rangeland or like Ted Turner or anything that contains the trees, you're not included in the list, which is asinine. But that's not the point. In Nebraska, he owns 20,000 acres. And much of it right around me, by the way, not too far from me, within a, you know, 50 miles. And I even went and got the property, the tax, because you can get what's public information on any deed of property in the county. And I went and got that printed off thing from Howard County. And then I figured out, if somebody else did the work, I didn't do it, I'm just reporting it, that he purchased $113 million worth of property in Nebraska, which stands to reason. But on that $113 million worth of property, he secured $700 million worth of loans. What do you suppose that's about?
Wow. And the thing that I couldn't believe, that they've been checking up who's been funding the money for all these Hamas protesters on these campuses.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the contributors.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what the heck is the matter with that guy? This country made him filthy rich because he, I don't know that he was necessarily a genius. He just put everything together and made it work. You know, it's a Jeff Bezos is nothing more than a monkey word catalog that's online. There's all of these things, they're inventions, it's made them rich, and they want to contribute to the chaos on the campuses. I don't understand that. And I, George Soros, I don't know what his problem is with life, but it's pretty strange. But Bill Gates, when they said that he was one of the contributors to Black Lives Matter, now maybe he was trying to buy them off. I don't know, but you can't buy off terrorists. They're like welfare. They're going to come back for more. You know, and it gives them credibility. It's nuts.
Well, I assume you have seen the videos that are pretty easy to find of him saying that we need to depopulate the earth by 2050.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And eat bugs, because bugs are easier to raise.
Well, you don't eat anything if you're dead.
Well, it does kind of inhibit that, all right.
Yep. No question. Maybe eating bugs actually contributes to the second part of the equation a little quicker. But if you want to depopulate Earth, get everybody eating a cricket. Oh, cricket. Oh, cricket.
Well, and then you can eat maggots when they die.
Yeah.
So,
cricket has a whole new meaning in life after Christy Noem.
Well, she committed political suicide. There's no question about it. She's done.
Oh, yeah. So, she's toast.
But all you have to do is watch a bear after they've killed a bunch of sheep. Do they go chew on the meat? Nope. They wait till they turn into maggots and they go eat the maggots. And when, I don't even know if it's legal anymore, but they used to have big old bear traps, and they'd make kind of a lane back into the trap, and they'd pile up the dead sheep that they killed. And I was with Raymond Joyce one time, and he had a bear because the boss was paying him for bear's ears. And that bear was in a trap, still alive, and he was sitting there nonchalantly.
I can barely wait to hear the end of this story. We're back with that after this.
That's it.
There's a better way to get tender meat. Certified Piedmontese. Order online today. cpbeef.com. Welcome back. Roll Route, Trent Luce alongside Hank Vogler. And just as Hank was getting into a good bear story, I had to pull the plug. So back to what you said, he was paid for the ears of a bear because the owner wanted to eliminate as many predators as possible.
Well, the worst thing about a bear, some of those guys in Idaho don't even have marker sheep, a black sheep, because black sheep walks out into the band and they all take off running if the bears have been after him. But a lot of times they'll run down through a pole thicket and pile up. That's the one that just absolutely makes you throw up. They run and then for day on end, a bird starts to fly and they all jump, pile up. I mean, it's just predation on sheep is just absolutely mind-boggling what it does to their mentality when it happens.
I actually don't
think the damage is not just the ones they kill.
I don't think that's any different with what the Colorado ranchers and Wyoming have for quite some time. But now we've released the 10 new wolves in the Rocky Mountains, and they're talking about, oh, we got ranchers talking about predation and depredation problems. If you talk to these guys, particularly in Montana that I've talked to for years, the death is an issue. But what it does to the stress level of cattle when there's a constant wolf predator dealing with them, their reproduction fails, their health fails, everything fails. And that's exactly what you just said about sheep.
Yeah, no. And hey, Colorado, I hope you're listening. You realize Oregon sent you 10 wolves that were problem wolves in Oregon. What, you thought they were going to smoke dope and lick frogs and eat grass? Are you out of your flipping mind? You know, if you're going to be a leader, you'll not make everybody happy. If you want to make everybody happy, sell ice cream. Don't try and be a leader. And this is not leadership. This is bending over to a small group of people that are looking through foggy eyes from some drug-induced hysteria, I guess. I cannot believe that. Well, it's a great way to eliminate public land grazing. And if you're a good old vegan, if you want to eliminate the production of meat, it's a great way to do it, is put the predators that we spent 500 years limiting. We didn't get rid of them. We limited them. This is nuts.
Welcome to our world, comrade. Hey, 10 yes. more every year. They're going to release 50, Hank. They're going to have to find 40 more problem wolves and get them shipped to Colorado in the next 4 years.
Well, and the problem wolves are the ones that they can catch because they're hanging around some guy's calving ground or around his yearlings or whatever. I guess they kill a full-grown cow. They usually hamstring them, and then the animal just goes into shock and lays down, and they eat them alive. Mm-hmm. But they're getting the problem wolves. They're not getting old Lassie that's minding his own business, killing all the deer. You know, I've been teasing the people around here. One of my committees on the county commission is the wildlife committee, and I've been teasing everybody that everybody's the deer tags are about to be issued. A few short years ago, a long time ago, you could buy a deer tag over the counter anywhere, any day during the season. Now they have a lottery. You know, I wonder what happened when they took out 80,000 sheep out of Nevada, or 500,000 or whatever they did, and started raising predators, stop 1080, all of these things that to control to make it profitable to be in different livestock businesses. So I've been teasing everybody that, hey, did you get a deer tag? Well, yeah, I did. But right across the bottom of it, they wrote BYOD. Now, what's that all about? Bring your own deer? I mean, there are none out there. They're gone.
Back to Colorado. What's the buzz in the sheep business about this Denver, the city of Denver, with its ballot initiative to try to ban, which would ultimately put Superior Livestock, or not Superior Livestock, excuse me, Superior Farms, the sheep processing plant in the city limits of Denver, out of business? Is there a concerted effort to rally to try to help educate Denver voters?
Well, this is the strangest deal I've ever been around. But Superior Farms is about as sheep friendly as a wolf. And there are a lot of people in the sheep industry that went, oh, well, you know, there are other people that have opened up a plant in Texas and other places and small kill floors. And especially with the Muslim trade, maybe the fact that it is within the city limits. I think there's another packing plant out that some folks bought out and it's been shuttered, different things like that. So it's just an attrition thing. And with the way most people that have dealt with Superior, I've only dealt with them once. And they cured me real quick.
You know, with so all that said, I'm not understand that. But what I am telling you is that all livestock production will be harmed if the city limits of Denver says no. And it's not just targeting sheep. It says no animal harvesting in the city limits. It's going to set a precedent for every city in the USA.
Yes. And that's the rational thing to believe. And also, how far are we away from, if we can ban fake meat in Alabama, how long is it going to be before they ban the use of meat in Denver, Colorado? I mean, that's kind of that's where the frog lickers live.
I'm in no way, shape, or form supporting a state ban or a city ban on fake meat. This is for the consumer to decide. What I'm opposed to is that government gets in and tries to manipulate the supply instead of coming in and saying, we should not be putting in bans on fake meat. That's stupid. Get government out of the way, not more government.
Yeah, the people have already voted. I mean, you only have to try one of those salty dogs one time, and you don't want no more. They don't have the formula down. I mean, if you've ever eaten meat, you know, but maybe if you're a vegan, maybe you feel really good about it. You know, I have to willfully admit that, like a quarter horse, I'm a quarter vegan. I like a good salad with a steak, so that would that make me a quarter vegan? So I don't know, but yeah, that's what it's all about, is control, absolute control. And Alabama has no business banning it, and I only brought that up as a teaser for you. No, let the consumer decide. When was the last time a consumer bought an Edsel except at some auction? I mean, they quit buying Studebaker wagons. And there's all sticks. Kinds of things that have and fell along sticks. The way. Yeah. Yeah. And I can remember Dr. Barmettler was a Seventh-day Adventist, and he was always in his lectures dribbling in something about the vegan diet, and it was called Loma Linda products. Yeah. So again, everybody should have that choice. We do not need the government in every part of our lives. And that is all it amounts to, is control. Control, control, control.
Well, so, I actually went to Loma Linda University in Loma Linda, California, the hub of the hub for the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And it was in 2011. And this very program I did with a couple of their, I'm using air quotes, scientists, talking about meat consumption contributing to climate change, and I was trying to hold them accountable. And a lot of what we're dealing with today started right there. That plus the Pope, immediately after that, wrote a encyclical or whatever they call it that was doing the same stupid thing.
It's like nutrition. The nutrition that they were preaching 40, 50 years ago was to limit meat consumption, cholesterol counts, all of these things. And so there was two sides to that issue. Now, that issue's dying on the vine, that it's not working. It's not helping our diet. Our obesity problems and everything can be traced back to not having a good diet that includes meat. And processed foods are not something that our systems were genetically put together 10,000 years ago. There's lots of things we can blame on the nutritionist. I mean, if you got a degree in nutrition and everybody was going one direction and you went another direction and sold that or gaslighted that through the system, you were on Oprah. You were on all the TV channels promoting your book on the vegan diet.
So, I'm here to tell you, Hank, if you look in the mirror and you don't like what you see, you can't blame a nutritionist or a food company. You can only blame the person you're looking at.
You got it. And what he hid in the closet away from everybody else so he could consume bukus of candy or things that probably aren't too good for you. Yes.
Yeah.
It's you.
But
when you can get programmed, I mean, how can you program these kids on these campuses? You know, maybe the Vietnam War in my era was something that rose the awareness to me of how dysfunctional our government was becoming, more as much as anything. And, you know, right or wrong, my country comes first. Those people got in control. They're all now supposedly retired, but how in the world can you support some people that put babies in an oven and turned it on and raped the mother? I'm sorry, that's just a little over the top.
Yeah, and yet we're still supporting them by sending money to the Ukraine, where they continue to do that today, no doubt about it. We've got to go. We've successfully journeyed down that path, connecting food producers to food consumers. For Hank Vogler, I'm Trent Lewis, both of us reminding you that all roads do lead to a roll route. And finally today, let's talk about nitric oxide. The ability for you to live a healthy lifestyle is all about what you consume, what you exercise, all of these things. But nitric oxide continues to be an untold story. And I've been at it for now 18 years. Start every single morning with a nitric oxide supplement. And mine always come from Dr. Nathan Bryan. He is the foremost authority in the world on nitric oxide. The medical community was poo-pooing him 20 years ago. Today, they're all coming around to say, hey, tell me more about how this nitric oxide works with cardiovascular health. Every single day, I hear somebody who's suffering from some cardiovascular incident. It's as simple as nitric oxide. NO2U.com. That's NO, number two, letter U.com. And if you'd like to get free shipping, put Trent as your coupon code. Have a great Monday. We'll see you tomorrow.